This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX. Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
Hey, look, we're on TV. You ever watch Gas House Gang on TV? I'm watching it right now. I watched you guys on the TV in my living room. I airplayed it. I'm like, got my wheels turning a little bit. Why isn't this show on TV? It's pretty fun.
Well, here's what you could do, Tom.
Yeah, what?
Don't you have one of those smart TVs?
Yeah, that's what I did. And I airplayed it up on the big screen. I'm like, this is phenomenal.
Get the YouTube app.
The YouTube app's cool, too. You could do that.
You can just watch us right there.
Yeah. It is fun. It is the Gas House Gang. We're here on Monday. Mondays are fun because I'm here with Ranj, and then we're with Amy, and we're with Rammer, and we talk all sports, all things. And things tend to break on Monday. We have news breaking right and left. We'll get into some baseball, a couple things that Chaim Bloom told me yesterday on Sports on a Sunday Morning that I found interesting. But two things. One, regarding baseball, Bruce Bochy is back with the San Francisco Giants. The Giants just announced that he has returned to the organization as a special advisor to baseball operations. Nice move there for Bruce Bochy.
Yeah, that's a good spot for a guy who's been a manager for a long time, doesn't want to do the grind.
Pretty nice guy to have at the ready if you're Tony Vitello. Hey, Bruce, Hall of Famer to be.
Yep.
What do you think about this move? Yeah, I like it. All right, thanks. And secondly, Brian Daboll,
another Giant,
has been fired by the New York Giants. Wow. You got him fired. What do you think about that?
You know what? Good for the Bears. Good for the Bears coming back. And Brian Daboll, this was one of those. Let me just say this. I don't want to get too deep into the Bears weeds, but this is the kind of game that usually the Bears coaching staff makes the dumb mistake toward the end where they decide not to go for it on like 4.5 yards from the goal line and really put it away and decide to kick the field goal instead, which allows the other team to come back and take the lead and win. And that's exactly what the Bears did. They came back, took the lead and won. Usually the Bears leave the door open with something stupid, but this time Brian Daboll did something stupid and now he's out of a job. I'm a little surprised they were that proactive though.
And I've spent my entire life watching Indiana football get its doors kicked in or lose games that they had won and then let it get away. And so it would go down as an L, but you always were like, man, but they were right there. And now here they are as one of the best teams in the country, number two. They get outplayed by Penn State, yet magically move down the field and win the game on a Fernando Mendoza Heisman Trophy drive. Omar Cooper with an incredible catch, and Indiana steals one at Penn State. Great football weekend for us.
Buddy,
great football weekend.
I'm going to tell you something. I saw that. I saw the end of the game. I saw Fernando Mendoza, who is now, by the way, the Heisman favorite. He is the Heisman betting favorite after what happened Saturday, and I thought there's just no, I mean, come on, no way that happened. That's incredible, dude. That is what they are doing. I cannot imagine being an Indiana fan and knowing that my football team was just a black hole of death and nothingness for years and generations, and really only basketball you could count on. And that football, they should have just contracted the program. They should have just gotten rid of Indiana football altogether.
Or relegate us, right?
Relegate them, yes, to whatever is less than the XFL. But to see that they are, you know, the number two team in the country, that they have legitimate national championship hopes, that's, I mean, you must be beside yourself.
It's amazing. That win,
unreal.
That win was the best one, and it was because they didn't play well, but championship teams find a way. And yeah, I've said it now. They are a championship caliber team. I didn't admit it until now that they found a way to win a game that they shouldn't have, and that tells me that they have it in them, that they can do this. And that was an amazing time. By the way, Mendoza is just like one of the best kids you could he's almost too perfect. Like he says all the right things. He makes all the plays. He's a great kid. He's smart. And Indiana's got a golden quarterback and just a wonderful team. Banged up with injuries right now. Found a way to get through it. Wisconsin and Purdue, their last two games. And then they try to figure it out. Big Ten championship looks like Ohio State if things stay this way. And then you roll in with a first round bye and try to figure out how to power your way to a national championship. It's hard to even imagine those words associated. And by the way, for dessert, Indiana, the next day, drops 100 points on Shaka Smart and Marquette in a basketball game in Chicago. Just like, dude, wow, what is happening?
Well, and let me, just for clarity's sake, Indiana's number two in the coaches' poll in the AP poll, football. They're number three in the CFP rankings.
Two.
They are three now as of yesterday because Texas A&M has taken the number two spot, I believe.
They haven't announced it yet.
They haven't yet? Oh,
no.
This is a, okay. Here's what we're looking
You're
at.
Looking
this
is like a power index.
Is a projection.
Yeah.
Is a projection what CFP might look
and
at.
I'd be
is it
fine
come out tomorrow?
With it. Yeah, it comes out every Tuesday. I'd be okay. It doesn't matter to me, really, at this point.
Well, I've heard that talk, that after beating Mizzou, that Texas A&M should
possible.
Be two.
I don't think that they'll downgrade Indiana.
I don't know how you could.
I mean, it's just such a great win. And, you know, they'll probably keep it the same, Raj, to be honest. I mean, the polls have them 1 through 5 the same. I think you'll have Alabama 4 and Georgia 5. Georgia looks pretty tough, by the way.
Yeah, they do.
But so they'll go 1 through 5 that way. But at this point, you know, you have to play out the schedule. I think that Indiana just escaped a major, major block in the road and got through it. And now they have a chance. Last home game against Wisconsin. Maybe the last home game of the season, because if they keep going this way, they won't play a playoff game at home. They'll go straight to the quarterfinals. And then Purdue at Purdue, and then the Big Ten Championship. We'll see how it all plays out. Missouri, meanwhile, loses to that Texas A&M team, and they did not look like a team that belonged in the playoff, both statistically and just to the eye test. Did not do enough to protect their quarterback, Matt Zollers. Just a brutal offensive line, and the play calling left a lot to be desired, I thought. You should have been a little more conservative with him. Short passing game, and the defense, it's a shame because Missouri's defense is good enough to compete in the SEC, but the offense with all the playmakers, they just can't get the ball to them enough, and they can't move the ball well enough against a solid Texas A&M team. That team is going to be very, very tough to knock out.
I just don't know how you can, and you know, we talked about the game going into the game over the weekend. That's a lot to ask from a quarterback who just got thrown into it.
Right,
I mean,
question.
A young guy who's probably going to be pretty good someday. You can't expect him to pop right in and handle a team like that.
Yeah, that's a lot to ask of the kid. 7 of 22 passing. They ran the ball effectively with 2 100-yard rushers, but maybe not enough running, and just it wasn't enough. Missouri could not handle Texas A&M. Got it to 24-10, and then in the fourth quarter, just got overwhelmed. The Cardinals are beginning their march here in this offseason in the GM meetings tomorrow towards trying to get this team back together. Chaim Bloom will be in Vegas at those GM meetings. Met with me yesterday. You can listen to the interview. It's about 9 or 10 minutes on Sports on a Sunday Mornings podcast page. But here are the Cliff's Notes. He said that, yes, they are going after pitching, and it depends on how they do it. If it's trade, we're looking at controllable younger pitchers for the Cardinals. Of course, that's going to cost a lot, so be prepared for that, but that's one of the things he's looking at. If it's free agency, do not expect them to get into some bidding war for all the top guys, but he said, you know, perhaps they would look for somebody who would like to, he didn't use these words, but I would say reclaim what they once were in the St. Louis environment. So an opportunity for somebody
to unlock something.
They think they can unlock something.
Hey, I mean, Tom, I got no problem with that.
Yeah,
I mean, this—if this were a different year where they were this close to being real championship contender, then I'd like to see a little better than a reclamation project.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see a little better than maybe a scrap heap guy that nobody ever really gave much thought to, or maybe the Cardinals coaching staff has identified something in him that other teams they feel like hadn't seen. If they were doing that, and this was verge of championship type roster, then I think I'd be a little annoyed with that. But right now, as they are in the midst of a rebuild, that doesn't bother me at all.
He said trade first, and he said controllable pitcher first, and a pitcher that they would be able to put in a rotation in October and help them.
Right.
That, since he said that first, that tells me that's their first option here moving forward, and that's what they're trying to do. I also asked him about Arenado and Contreras and Gray. Any updates on conversations with those players? He said not anything more than what they told the media after that last series in Chicago. And he didn't really expand on that, but all three. And he said, I appreciated their transparency. No real updates injury-wise on any of them. And he said that's a good thing, that they're all sort of progressing. quite well. So here we go. I mean, the GM meetings start tomorrow. Conversations start to happen, and we'll see what the Cardinals end up doing. The Blues, they lost again, this time in overtime. It's just excruciating how things are happening to them. A goal at the end of regulation looked like goalie interference, and then an overtime loss. We'll talk it over with Amy Markscores coming up next. I'll tell you a bright spot in the St. Louis landscape, the St. Louis Billikens. They're pretty good. When you score 200 points in two games, I think that's pretty good. We'll talk to Bob Ramsey about that at 12:30. More baseball talk. We'll take all of your texts and comments as well at YouTube, X, and Facebook. With Chris Ranji, I'm Tom Ackerman. This is the Gas House Gang. Amy Markscores talking Blues hockey when we come back.
To the middle, off Hofer, to the far wing it goes. They come back to Stevenson. He shoots. They've scored. The puck deflects in. The Kraken have tied it up with just about a second on the clock.
We were just talking about this off the air. The box score says 19:58 of the third period. The scoreboard read 0.5. Whatever it was excruciating. The Blues giving up the goal to the Seattle Kraken at the end of regulation. With Amy Markscores now in studio, I'm Tom Ackerman. Chris Ranji is here. James O'Sullivan, look, he's on the video too. He's one of our producers. Frank Ladd is also producing. Amy, whatever it is, should it have counted? I mean, was that goalie interference or not?
Yes, it was goalie interference. I will say, obviously, the league has the final say, but ruling the way they did, especially in light of the way they ruled a few games ago when Mackenzie McEachern got the goalie interference and the goal was called back, it makes zero sense to me. There's certain boxes that need to be checked for it to be goalie interference. The player needs to be in the crease and the blue paint without being pushed or shoved, which he was. He needs to initiate contact with the goaltender, which he did. Eberle's skate hit the stick, the blade of Joel Hofer. And then thirdly, that contact needs to somehow impede the goaltender from making the save. Well, the stick side, blocker side, is the side that Jordan Eberle interfered with, and that's the side in which the goal was scored. To me, I think to the broadcasters, Chris Kerber, Joey Vitale, and to the team, Jim Montgomery, the rest of the team, the Blues video coach, they were all pretty darn certain this was goaltender interference. So certain that Jim Montgomery had said if this were not in the final minute of play, if there had been 5 minutes left in the game, they would have challenged it themselves. And they only challenge when they're pretty darn sure. Because think about this. Half a second left in the game, if they challenge and they're wrong, they go into overtime shorthanded. So they were that certain. They know we would have challenged it 100%. We knew that was goaltender interference. It makes zero sense. I was up in the press box. Everyone was confounded. You know, all the beat writers, the writers were, they emailed the league, you know, and knowing that the league was probably going to give some canned response, which they did. It was determined. You know, that's what they said. It was determined. It didn't interfere with Hofer's ability to make a save. It doesn't make any sense to me.
No, that's the thing, is that if we all know the rules and you just laid them out perfectly, and so did Montgomery after the game, then why doesn't the NHL reverse it? Well, you just explained some of their thinking, but that was a mess. And then they don't get the puck at all in overtime and lose to the Kraken. They find new ways to lose. That one, not really their fault necessarily with the goalie interference that wasn't called, but they still find new ways to lose these games. I mean, they put themselves in position to lose the game. It's just crazy.
They did. And that's the thing. They finally got their first good bounce in the win against Edmonton when Robert Thomas was at the goal line. He tosses the puck. It hits the back of the goalie and goes in. They get their first good bounce because they put themselves in a position to get a good bounce. They do what they need to do, which is effectively clear their own zone, have clean breakouts so they don't have turnovers in the neutral zone, and they forecheck aggressively. They did those things, and when you do those things and you have puck position in the offensive zone, you're going to create opportunities to have good bounces. Conversely, when you don't clear the zone, which they didn't, they missed multiple opportunities to clear their own zone. When you come out with a lackluster second period and you have multiple neutral zone turnovers. You have multiple blue line turnovers at the offensive zone, which means no sustained pressure in the offensive zone. You put yourself in a position to become victim to a bad bounce or a bad call. So yes, they lost that game because of what was objectively the wrong call, but they also shouldn't have allowed themselves to be put in that position in the first place.
Well, they're up 2-0.
Yep.
You know, and it's another multi-goal lead they blew, and it's not like, again, I mean, yeah, the call was probably bad, and they would have, like you said, they would have challenged that, but they're letting teams mm-hmm. back into games when they have no business being in games.
You know, and I don't understand lackluster play. I don't understand coming out in the second period flat. There, you know, we saw Jordan Kyrou got benched. He's their, you know, big goal scorer. That made news across the National Hockey League when Jordan Kyrou was a healthy scratch because, as we've heard from Jim Montgomery, from, you know, all the hockey people, the one power that a coach has, the leverage that a coach has, is ice time, playing time. That's what the coach has. You don't want to play that card a lot. You don't want to keep benching your top guys, but they benched Kyrou. He comes back, has a strong game. But why are we seeing this again? We're in a position that you have to bench Kyrou at the beginning of the season. It doesn't make any sense to me. I said this earlier today as well. Tom, when you think back to this spring, remember that Winnipeg game was so physical that around the league, whether it was Winnipeg broadcasters, Blues broadcasters, other guys in the NHL saying, I don't think I've ever seen a playoff series so physical. They were blowing each other up. That core group is still there. And it's confusing that you can see that play out of this core group, but you can also see the play that we've seen this season where they don't seem ready. They're inconsistently committed on the ice, I guess you could say. And we've seen that before. We saw it in 2023. We saw it in 2024. I'm not quite sure what to make of it.
Well, they did all they could, I think, to try to shake it up. They call up Dvorsky. They mm-hmm. make a healthy scratch in the form of Jordan Kyrou. They send Logan Mailloux to Springfield. That's the latest move, is the AHL now has Mailloux. He just looked overwhelmed. You had to do it.
You do. And the thing is, with Logan Mailloux, you want him to get his confidence back. And Jim Montgomery said that. You know, you send Mailloux back down. It's not like punishment. It's just you've got a young defenseman. And I was worried, you know, bringing him up at a time when the team's not playing well. You know, you put him with another young defenseman while the team's not playing well. That's a pretty big ask of a young defenseman like Logan Mailloux, who only has a handful of NHL games under his belt now. So you send him back down to the AHL. Hope he gets that ice time where, you know, 20 minutes more, and he's able to get his confidence back. That's not too concerning. I think that is a common occurrence for young developing defensemen. So I hope he's able to get his confidence back. You see him up in the press box. He's been a healthy scratch multiple games now. You see him, you know, talking to Robert Bortuzzo or Al MacInnis, veteran defensemen who can help him as he develops into the game. Also, the game looks a lot slower from the press box, you know, and you can just see how much time you have. Hopefully he builds his confidence.
Kevin is watching us on Facebook and says, yep, the Blues find a way to lose. Will fans start no-showing like Cardinals fans did? And I think that's the kind of thing that usually takes a little bit of time. It's not like, oh, you're having a bad first month of the season. Well, I'm not going to mm-hmm. games anymore. It's not really like that. It's usually a slow burn. It's like a 2, 3, 4 seasons. You feel like, all right, this team's not competitive. Now I'm not going. That's not what this is.
Well, and also, yeah, it's a smaller fan base. It's a smaller venue. There are fewer home games. The way the tickets work, they're a little different. We know with hockey tickets versus baseball tickets. And I do think there are still some bright points for the Blues. Like you said, a bad start. We've seen that before. We've seen them bounce back. There's hope that they're going to bounce back. I'm hopeful. Maybe I'm a shill for the team, but like I can't help myself. I like to see the talent on this team. They're They're playing below their potential for sure. We saw what they could be at the end of last season in the playoffs against Winnipeg, and I am excited about this team. I do know Jordan Binnington's going to turn things around. He's had a bad start, but we know what he can be. His ceiling is high. It's also fun to see young guys like Dalibor Dvorsky. That's a fun kid to watch, and I think overall, hockey is fun, and no, I don't see fans no-showing, not now.
Yeah, it's not about the players for them. You know, the Cardinals fans, it was never about the players. It was about ownership and front office, in particular John Mozeliak. I don't sense that here, except for the John Kelly firing.
Yeah, that was
their
hard,
blowback from the fans towards the top. Other than that, it's just been a disappointment. Now here comes Calgary playing tomorrow night, and they haven't scored a goal in a week. They lost to Minnesota 2-0, lost to the Blackhawks 4-0, so you know they're due. I worry about that. I worry about everything with this team right now.
I know.
Just like everything that could go wrong has gone wrong until I see it turn. This is the blowouts and the blown leads. It's just too much.
You got Indiana football.
I do have that.
Thank God for
that.
You.
Thank goodness for that. But yeah, Calgary, I mean, what is your read on Calgary right now?
Yeah, I mean, they're not great. They're not a great team, but I mean, you know, if people... from the outside, or to look at the Blues right now, they say, well, you're one to talk. Mm-hmm. The Blues and Calgary are hanging out together at the bottom of the league. So there is that. I hope they take advantage of this game to try to pull things together. I don't like the do factor. I don't know if you believe in that in sports or not, but I don't like it when a team is on a 4 or 5 game losing streak and they face you or they haven't scored a goal in a week.
I do.
I kind of believe in the do factor. I don't like it.
Well, let me put it to you this way. If Calgary, the worst team in the West, and the worst team in hockey, period, with 10 points, beats you, beats you soundly, the alarms will sound.
Yeah.
Now you want to see panic? That'll be panic. So there, I just set the table for you for
there
tomorrow.
There you go. I mean, I can't even think about it. But yeah, I mean, you are not wrong, and I do think if this pattern continues, and I hope it doesn't, because we saw that victory against the Edmonton Oilers. I would say if they had lost that game, I do wonder if Doug Armstrong would address the media at some point if the team struggled at the way they were struggling.
Oh, I love a good Doug Armstrong middle of the season presser.
I mean,
just holding players accountable and just some old school army is what I want.
Think about that though. Like, if they had continued to lose games, especially if they hadn't beaten Edmonton at home, I wonder, would there have been a presser? I don't know.
I could see it. But I'll tell you what, Jim Montgomery's not in any trouble. This is not about him. It is, but it's about a collective thing.
It's not really him. I mean, it's going to be a while before it's him.
He's the face.
You know what I mean?
But it's about everybody. And, you know, as Amy just said, it's the same roster, basically, with a few additions and subtractions here and there. But mostly, it's the same team that battled Winnipeg to 7 games into the final second. What the heck is going on over there? Anyway. Amy, you always do a great job.
Okay, thanks.
Appreciate it. Amy Mark Scores breaking down the Blues. When is your show with Curbs Wednesday?
Wednesday, 6 p.m. Matrix Midwest, 6 on Spectrum, 32 over the air, or download the app.
All right, fantastic. Tonight, Billikens, Lindenwood, 7 o'clock tip-off for SLU. They're 2-0. They're averaging 100 a game. We'll talk it over with the voice of the Billikens, Bob Ramsey, coming up next. The Gas House Gang is sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, SaligaHeatingandCooling.com.
They're still on the dribble, can't get around the
Look
bigger
at
things.
Stolen away by Kellen.
Protect yourself.
Length to the floor, to the hole, layup good because Bush was all over him or he would have dunked it.
Yes. Look at that. He stole it from a 5'9 point guard.
And stolen away by Quentin Jones. Wants to weave and drive. Reverse layup. Yes. Oh, take him to Q School.
Yes.
Look at the dogs. Stolen away by Thames for Sharma. Step back three. Bang. Instant Sharma. Oh, the defense has gone crazy in Chaffetz Arena.
Absolutely nuts. Bob Ramsey, Earl Austin Jr. with the call. 108-86 win over Chicago State. Our visits with Rammer, sponsored by Royal Banks of Missouri. Hello, Rammer. That was a lot of fun, wasn't it?
Hey, fellas. That sequence was unbelievable. You know, in particular, all three of those plays, getting the ball back and scoring, were great. But when you go back and look at on your TV side, Tom, on the inbound, Thames is almost going out of bounds himself to make the steal, and somehow in one motion threw it all the way, you know, diagonally through the paint out to the left perimeter from the right baseline, kind of in one motion. It was an amazing pass, and then Sharma made it even more amazing by hitting the three. But just electric. It was really a fun moment.
Thames is an incredible athlete. I mean, how nice to have him feeling good right now through two games.
Yeah, and to go along with his basketball IQ and skill to go along with the high-level energy, it makes him a complete player. And, you know, hopefully he'll be able to give you close to 20 minutes a night. I think he's averaging, 17 now, something like that. And so they'll get him out there in spurts throughout a game. And what he can do is just simply amazing.
I know that last season there were a lot of real big expectations when it came to SLU, especially with the acquisition of Robbie Avila, who comes over and follows his head coach, Josh Schertz. I love Josh Schertz. I think he's awesome. And, you know, it didn't quite go the way I think they expected early on, and Avila had the injury, so he was dealing with that. But how much better do you think this team, this version of a team that's only played two games, how much better are they than last season?
Oh, well, there's no comparison. It's a different team in almost every respect. And even in the returners like Thames and Avila, their roles are different. Well, first of all, Kellen gets to play. And assuming reasonable health for Robbie, his role has changed. And even though he's averaging 18 in these first two games, he doesn't have to score a ton to be effective. What's really weird is, and I wouldn't have bet on this one, he didn't have any assists yet. He's probably the best passer on the team. So all those things are going to change. This is you go from having, by the end of the year, five players in the rotation to having nine or 10. It's just a remarkably different team day and night.
That said, Josh Schertz was not a happy camper in the last 7 or 8 minutes of that game. We could see that he was upset. You got to talk to him right after the game, and he talked to the media. What sort of things, and I talked to him yesterday, but at the time, though, he was pretty hot about his defense and just the overall play.
Yeah, the defense, and at the end of the game, you know, you've gotten the lead out to 36 and frittered it away, not playing the game. In air quotes, the right way. Who determines that? The head coach determines that. And I thought it was remarkable that he talked about selfishness, stat hunting, and those sorts of things, along with lackluster defense throughout the game. Now, we just played a clip of steals and scores and those sorts of things, but more fundamental defensive responsibility, I think, is what Coach Schertz is talking about. And but I think that the refusal on the buy-in that each and every player had committed to in the offseason, in the summer, and it's a different animal when, hey, yeah, I can do that. I can be part of that. You know, I'm going to be part of this team and the rotation and playing 10 and all that. And then the games come around and you're only playing 12 minutes or 15 minutes. You go, I don't really like this. I want to play the whole game. And so since you talked to him Sunday, I'd be interested in how Josh reacted 2 days later, Tom. But he just said that kind of play will not take place while he's the head coach of St. Louis U. I thought it put me back in my seat, I'll tell you that, because he was not kidding.
He was very calm, I thought, yesterday in the interview, so he had a couple of days to sort of come down from that. He talked about points per possession and opportunities that they have to score, and they expect to score a lot, I think, the way that they're loaded right now, and certainly he wants a more consistent effort defensively. He did sing the praises of Simo again, which I think is important to note, that they did take out, I mean, after what they did against Chicago State's one thing, but they didn't play great and still hammered a good SEMO team by 25 points. All you have to do is look at what Mizzou had to do against them. They had to fight to beat Southeast. Rammer?
SEMO is better than some of the prognosticators thought. And part of that, not to get off on a weird tangent, you know, all of us, whether you're writing in magazines or newspapers, radio, TV, whatever, you're supposed to come up with opinions and strong opinions. And I've seen SEMO mostly picked in the middle of the pack in the Ohio Valley. But part of that is because we always and understandably so, always look at unknown factors automatically put in the negative column. Well, they lost their lead guards, their two top guards, but they replaced them. And they and that's what you didn't know when you're making the picks in the fall. And SEMO's going to contend for the Ohio Valley again. I'm not saying they're the best. They're the only team I've seen so far. But they replaced what they lost, and I think they're going to be just fine.
So tonight, SLU will host Lindenwood at Chaffetz Arena. And this is the Lindenwood program, really the entire thing. I'm pretty impressed with the sports programs overall. They've become, you know, making the leap to Division I and being able to do that. I don't expect tonight will be a massive test, though, for SLU. I mean, this is one that they should take. I mean, you guess you never really know. But as far as their strength of schedule overall this year goes, I know right now they're, what, 69th in the Pomeroy, in the Ken Pom rankings. What do you think of their schedule overall before they even get to A-10 play?
Well, I think it's one that you have to come out of non-conference play with a really gaudy record, or you have no chance of an at-large bid. And that's the real challenge when you can't get the Power Fives to play you, and they won't. And that's why you have to have a good opportunity or multiple good opportunities in MTE, the tournament play, preseason, non-conference tournament play. And that is critical. And that's why Coach was really upset when the Acrisure kind of baited and switched them really aren't getting the matchups they'd hoped for in their MTE. So what that does is reduce your opportunities to get big wins. Now, in this case, it's only one, but when you don't have many at all, one seems like a lot. And I think with the Big Fives not wanting to play mid-majors, that it's going to be a challenge, not just for SLU, but for any mid-major team to put together schedules that can boost their opportunities for at-large bids for the NCAA tournament. The flip side of that is Travis Ford put together some marvelous, challenging non-conference schedules, but you got to win some of those games, mm-hmm. and the Billikens didn't. And so, you know, that's the tightrope a mid-major coach has to walk.
How about this? Tonight, two Billiken Hall of Famers, two Lindenwood Hall of Famers, Bob Ramsey and Earl Austin Jr. calling this game. What will that be like for you?
It's going to be a lot of fun. And speaking of tightropes to walk, it's going to be a lot of fun. But let's be clear. What you said was technically correct, but Earl Austin is the best, you know, relatively based on awards and, you know, points scored, and he was all time scorer and leading rebound. Earl was a great player. I had the good fortune of being at the end of the bench on a really great basketball team. So there's a huge difference between the two, huge. And, it's going to be great. And then to add to it, you know, Earl and I do, I think this year we're going to do 9 TV games for Lindenwood basketball. So it's like we're watching, you know, we're watching our two favorite teams play each other. So it's going to be a fun night. And I think Lindenwood is going to be much better than a lot of people think. And I think they're going to be in the top half of the league, the Ohio Valley, for sure. And if they stay healthy, I think they're going to make a run at that league. I think they've got an opportunity to be that good. And so it should be a very, very good basketball game tonight at Chaffetz.
Yeah, as Josh Schertz pointed out, their top two scorers didn't play against Texas Tech. Lindenwood's already played a top 10 team in the country. It's going to be fun tonight, Rammer. We can't wait. It's on KMOX. It's a 6:45 pregame. It's a 7 o'clock tip. But even better, go down to Chaffetz Arena on this cold night and warm up with some college basketball, because there's just not much better right now than what the Billikens can offer you for your money. I don't think there is a sport in town that can do what they do. Our visits, Rammer, are sponsored by Royal Banks of Missouri. Tell us about Royal Banks of Missouri.
Now back to the Gas House Gang, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Back on the show here for the next 5 minutes or so, and then we will turn things over to Dave Glover with Chris Ranji. I'm Tom Ackerman, the Gas House Gang, Monday edition. Were you surprised that Albert Pujols didn't get that Padres gig?
I thought that was the whole deal, you know, the fact that he interviewed for as long as he did, what, 9.5 hours? And I imagine they take a lot of time with any managerial candidate they bring in, but 9.5 hours all at once seems like an extraordinarily long time. I mean, from all accounts, it seems like he wanted the gig. I'm not sure exactly what changed there, why they went a different direction. But ultimately, I think he's going to be a pretty good manager, I think. We don't really know that. You don't know what kind of manager he's going to be. We don't know what kind of manager Yadier Molina is going to be. I think the assumption that a lot of Cardinals fans have is just because those guys are so great and so smart at baseball that they are going to have winning baseball teams. Well, that's not necessarily the case. Ted Williams was a smart baseball player. Ted Williams had bad teams that he managed, too. So one doesn't necessarily lead to the other thing. But I do think that he will, in the end, be a pretty good one. But I don't know that for sure.
I'll be curious to see what the Cardinals do here over the next couple of days as they get closer, I think, to announcing their field staff and how they shuffle those things around. And if they add any more, they're also going to make announcements officially about their front office. But fans want to know, they're kind of, that's nice and all. They want to know what sort of players we're talking about here. Miles Michaelis is a free agent. I do not think that he'll be back in this rotation. And I have my doubts that Sonny Gray will. I think that Sonny Gray ends up with some, maybe the Braves or somebody like that, closer to his Nashville home. And the Cardinals get younger. They go after, as Time mentioned, some controllable young starters and perhaps a reclamation project or two that they can put into the competition along with some pretty good ones, I think, in Michael McGreevy and Kyle Leahy. I'm still waiting to see Matthew Liberatore put together the full season, although he has a ton of promise. Quinn Matthews is a little far away. I need to see him more in Memphis, and spring training should be interesting from that standpoint. But you got to get their rotation solidified. And then the big thing for me, I think obviously you add as much bullpen help as you can, but the Cardinals have to find some power somehow, some way.
Yep.
And they got to tap into some power here. And I'll be curious to see where Heim goes in that direction, if he does it right away or if they start to acquire more power for the minor league system right now, as much as they can gather, and see what comes out of it. Because I watched a lot of playoffs this year, more postseason than I normally would, and all I saw were home runs being hit.
That's right.
I mean, all I saw were games being changed on home runs, and I thought, who on the Cardinals could do this? None.
Well,
I couldn't think of one person on this Cardinals roster that I would think would blast one out of the park in a big moment. Arenado used to.
Yep.
But he, I think, will be traded, and I don't see anybody else.
I think the expectation was that ultimately Walker would be that, or he'd be part of it, but he just hits the ball into the ground.
I mean, Gorman's the closest one, probably,
that's right.
Of somebody that you throw him a cookie over the middle, he's going to hit it out.
So the Cardinals, let's just go in ascending order, from the worst in baseball to and heading upward. The worst power team, the worst home run team in the sport was the Pirates, then the Cardinals, then the Padres, playoff team, Marlins, Royals, Rockies, terrible baseball team, Nationals, White Sox.
Padres, so, really? That's surprising.
Yeah, Padres were the third lowest, but they could pitch.
Oh boy.
Like, I mean, you can be that. There's not only one way to do it. What we're saying is, if you don't have power, you're just making the job a whole lot more difficult. And you better be an exceptional pitching team if you're not hitting for power, because you're going to play a lot of close games. And that means you're going to play a lot of late games, and you're going to go to your bullpen, and you need them to be lights out. So if you have that, yeah, you can win without power, but it just makes the job a whole lot tougher. So how do the Cardinals climb substantially from 29th in the sport to, I don't know, like 15th or something? I don't know how you do that in one off season.
It just looks like there's such a huge gap between them and other teams in that area. That is a big, big thing they have to address. There are a lot of things across the board that they need to fix. And the rotation, of course, is numero uno. Got to have that or this season will be a disaster. You got to have some foundation of a rotation. Bernie Miklas with us tomorrow.
That's right. Let's go.
Let's do it. Chris Ranji, Tom Ackerman. Thanks for joining us. The Gas House Gang on KMOX.